Dr. Gazelle, would you like to just, in this portion of the welcome introductions, we're hoping to provide just a brief introduction to yourself, brief background to that standpoint, as well as we're going to be going over our non-disclosure of interest form that everyone signed. And so before we do this, sorry, Scott, before I hand it over to you, I'm going to have Ann Hammersmith, our general counsel here, just briefly discuss to the group this disclosure of interest section, and then we'll move forward into the actual introductions of the steering committee.
Hi, everyone. This is Ann Hammersmith. What I'd like to do is just to briefly remind you of the non-disclosure forms that you filled out earlier before you joined the committee. What we're going to do is we're going to ask you to introduce yourself, state your position, and then to share with your fellow committee members what you put on your form in terms of interests that you felt you should reveal. The intent of this is to encourage transparency in our dealings, to avoid apparent and real conflicts of interest, and to have members inform each other of their activities. So we ask you to do this at the outset of the meeting. You should also keep in mind that whenever you're discussing something in a meeting, if you have a concern, if you think you might have a conflict of interest and you didn't realize it, or if it suddenly occurs to you, please go ahead and speak up. And that's in the spirit of our disclosure of interest policy. So Ian and Sarah, since we're all on the phone, it might be easier if you called on people.
Okay.
So it wouldn't be so chaotic.
All right. So we'll just work down our list that we have here. Are there any questions as we move forward, or are we clear to move? All right. Taking that, I didn't hear anything, well, I think we'll move forward. Dr. Gazelle, would you mind starting off just providing a brief introduction as well as disclosing any interests that you may have, as well as providing just a background of who you are and where you come from?
Okay, great. First, I'd like to welcome all the committee members and thank you for your work on this. I had the pleasure of participating in the last Imaging Efficiency Steering Committee, and while it was a fair amount of work, it was also it was fun to participate in, and I think everyone will enjoy it. I'm a radiologist by training. I'm a professor of radiology at Harvard and professor of health policy and management at the Harvard School of Public Health. Clinically, I do abdominal imaging, and my research tends to focus on evaluation of new medical technologies, not just imaging technologies, but across all technologies. I don't have any conflicts to disclose. My funding is all either government or foundation. I don't currently have any industry relationships.
All right, wonderful. Thank you very much, Dr. Gazelle. Dr. Bello, would you mind leading off from there?
Absolutely. I'm Jacqueline Bello. I am a professor of radiology at the Albert Einstein College of Medicine, and I direct the Division of Neuroradiology at Montefiore Medical Center. I run a fellowship training program. I have no disclosures.
All right, wonderful. Thank you and welcome. Dr. Cantrell, would you lead off from there?
Yes, Steve Cantrell. I'm an emergency physician. I've been in practice for 30 years here in Denver, Colorado. I've been involved in cost containment and emergency medicine for several decades. We also have relatively extensive experience in terms of the development of practice guidelines in emergency medicine, and have been involved also in guidelines for treatment of traumatic brain injury. I don't have any conflicts to disclose.
Wonderful and welcome. Thank you. Dr. Dorsey, would you mind following that?
Sure. I'm Dr. Dorsey. I'm a professor of radiology and hematology and oncology at Emory. I'm an unpaid consultant for Hologic Corporation, and I have less than $1,000 in stock options, and my research interests are in technology assessment for early detection and chemotherapy efficacy for breast cancer.
Dr. Dorsey, could you explain to the group what kind of work Hologic does?
Hologic specializes in women's imaging, and right now they are involved with manufacture of digital mammography units.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, moving on from there, but first of all, Dr. Dorsey, welcome and thank you. Dr. Fissinger, would you mind following?
Yes, this is Troy Fissinger. I'm a practicing family physician in Houston. I'm here on behalf of the American Academy of Family Physicians. I also, in addition to practice, teach in a family medicine residency affiliated with Texas A&M, and for about 5 or 6 years, I've had a strong interest in quality improvement and patient safety. I worked on some national work groups on guidelines and efficiency measures around asthma, hepatitis C, and COPD. I am on the board of directors of our local physicians group for a Medicare Advantage plan. That's my one disclosure.
Okay, thank you very much and welcome. Moving on from there, Dr. Foreman?
Yes. Hi, this is Howie Foreman. I'm a professor of diagnostic radiology, management economics, and public health at Yale University. And I am a practicing emergency room trauma radiologist, and I do not believe I have any financial conflicts of interest whatsoever.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome. Dr. Gibbons?
I'm a staff cardiologist at the Mayo Clinic, where I've worked for 28 years, was heavily involved for more than a decade with the practice guidelines effort of the American College of Cardiology and American Heart Association, and was the chair of that effort for 3 years. I am a cardiac imager in terms of my subspecialty identification. I am an unpaid consultant for cardiovascular clinical studies for something called the Women Study, which is a study of imaging in women, and also a paid consultant for Lantheus Medical Imaging and Molecular Insight Pharmaceuticals.
Okay, thank you very much. Moving on from there, Dr. Griffey, would you mind following?
Sure. I am an associate chief of quality and safety and practicing emergency physician at Washington University in St. Louis. I work in areas of quality and safety and emergency evidence-based imaging. I'm here on behalf of the American College of Emergency Physicians, and I don't have any financial disclosures.
Okay, thank you very much. Dr. Patricia Howard?
Hi, I'm Patty Howard. I'm the Operations Manager for Emergency and Trauma Services at the University of Kentucky Chandler Medical Center. I am an emergency nurse for 30 years and am actually here at the request of the American Nurses Association, where I sit on the Congress of Nursing Practice and Economics. I am, as I said, an emergency nurse by background, but I'm also a nurse researcher and also worked with Dr. Cantrell on the mild traumatic brain imaging or the mild traumatic brain injury project, and part of my current role is all about efficiency, and of course, radiology has a significant impact on efficiency in emergency services, and I have no conflicts.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome. Following that, Dr. Metzler, would you like to speak?
Yes, I am an associate professor at the State University of New York at Buffalo. I'm the vice president of the Dendrologic Institute, chief of neuro-oncology at Roswell Park Cancer Institute, and my subspecialties are both certified in headache medicine, neuro-oncology, and neuroimaging at the Dent Institute. I'm the director of the Headache Center, and also the last 20 years I've been running the neuroimaging fellowship. And I have no financial disclosures.
All right, thank you very much and welcome. Following that, Dr. Raskin.
Yes, I'm an attending neurosurgeon at Cook County Hospital, where I run the section of neurotrauma and neurocritical care, as well as direct the neuro ICU. My research involves non-invasive imaging for traumatic brain injury, using MRI predominantly. I am here as a representative of the Guidelines Committee of the American Association of Neurological Surgeons, and I have no disclosures to report.
All right, wonderful. Thank you very much. Following that, Dr. Rucker?
Don Rucker. I'm the Chief Medical Officer for Siemens Healthcare, so I'm a full-time employee there. Siemens Healthcare is a very large vendor of essentially most known diagnostic products. We, along with GE and Philips, are the largest manufacturer of CT scanners, MR, PET, fluoroscopy, brain radiology. We also have a very large, roughly the same size, I think, as Roche diagnostic lab business, so, you know, blood chemistry, if you will. On the clinical side, I'm on the clinical faculty at the University of Pennsylvania and practice emergency medicine there on a part-time basis. Those are my disclosures.
All right, wonderful. Thank you very much and welcome. Moving on from there, Dr. Setson.
Hi. I'm a private practice otolaryngologist in Albany, New York, and representing the American Academy of Otolaryngology, and I'm the chair of the Board of Governors of the American Academy of Otolaryngology, and involved in the Guidelines Development Task Force for the Academy. I also am secretary of the Intersocietal Commission for the Accreditation of CT Laboratories, one of the three accrediting organizations recognized by CMS, and have a clinical assistant appointment at Albany Medical College, and am on the Speakers Bureau for UCB Pharma, Sanofi, and Alcon.
All right, wonderful. Thank you very much, and welcome. With Dr. Smith-Biden?
Yes, Rebecca Smith-Beinman. I'm a faculty member at UCSF. I'm in the Department of Radiology and Epi and Biostatistics. My research focuses mostly on outcomes of diagnostic testing, looking at sort of utilization, effectiveness, safety, and cost. The content area of my research has largely focused on diagnostic tests for breast cancer, for prenatal screening tests for birth defects, and more recently on CT and specifically the safety of CT related to its radiation exposure. I have no conflicts to report.
Thank you very much and welcome. Dr. Snow?
Yes, I'm Roger Snow. I'm an internist and also am boarded in pathology. I'm presently the Deputy Medical Director for MassHealth, which is the Massachusetts Medicaid agency. I'm here as a part of my standing with the Medicaid Medical Directors Learning Network, and I have background also with the practice guidelines, and I have no disclosures.
All right, thank you very much and welcome. Dr. Stillman?
Hi, I'm Arthur Stillman. I'm a professor of radiology at Emory University. I specialize in cardiac imaging with a particular interest in cardiac MRI and CT. I have no relevant disclosures. I'm here by request from the American College of Radiology.
All right, thank you very much and welcome. Dr. Zerzan?
Hello, I'm Judy Zerzan. I'm a general internist, and I am Colorado's Medicaid Medical Director and also part of the Medicaid Medical Directors Learning Network that Dr. Snow mentioned. With part of my time, I'm assistant professor in general internal medicine at the University of Colorado, where I do some research on Medicaid prescription drug policy and practice as a hospitalist, and I have no disclosures.
All right. Thank you very much, everyone. I greatly appreciate it. I just wanted to open up to see if anyone else had joined us on the phone at this time. We did not get to.
Yes, I did. I'm Dr. Mary Gemignani.
Welcome. I guess I don't know if you were here, but we're just doing a brief introduction as well as going over information that you provided on your disclosure of interest form submitted to NQF. So if you would just provide us a brief background, and we'll move from there.
Yes, I'm Dr. Mary Gemignani. I'm an attending surgeon in the breast service at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center in New York. I have a primary interest in research in high-risk evaluation for women for breast cancer who are at genetic risk and also PET imaging in breast cancer. I've been a prior member of the NQF Imaging Steering Committee and have been representative for the American College of OBGYN. I have no disclosures.
All right, wonderful. Thank you very much and welcome. Has anyone else joined or is that it for today?
This is Mike Backus.
Oh, yes. Mr. Backus, I don't know if you were here earlier, but we're just providing a brief background.
Yeah.
And
perfect. My name is Mike Backus. I run analytics and medical economics for American Imaging Management, which is a subsidiary of WellPoint. We provide pre-auth and other services for high-tech radiology for about 30 or 35 million Americans. I have no other outside conflicts.
All right. Well, wonderful. Thank you very much, everyone, and welcome. Just Anne is going to follow up with one quick thing, and then we'll move forward.
Thank you all for participating in the disclosure of interest portion of the meeting. At this time, I want to ask you if any of you have any concerns that you want to raise about disclosure of interest, or if any of you have questions for each other. I'm going to take that silence as a no. So thank you all very much.
All right. Wonderful. Thank you, everyone. So moving along the agenda, we're a little bit ahead of schedule, which is good. But before we move ahead, does anyone have any questions for us at this point that we can address? All right. Just by judging by the silence, I think we'll plan on moving forward. I guess before we do that, I'd like to give Helen, are you on the phone?
I am. Sorry, I was just muting you. I'm still seeing patients this morning. Hi, it's Helen Burstyn. I'm the Senior Vice President at NQF for Performance Measures. I just want to add my welcome and my thanks. We got a really good response to this call for measures, and we're very pleased. And this is a slightly bigger steering committee than we've had before. But given the diversity of the kind of measures that were brought forward, we really wanted to ensure that there was expertise on the steering committee to effectively review all these measures. So I'll be with you next week. But if you have any questions or concerns, please feel free to contact me or Ian, and you're in great hands with Scott and Eric as your chairs. So I'll hand it back to you, Ian.
All right. Thank you very much, Helen. And while I know this is unfortunately kind of impersonal, doing the phone call, if anyone has any questions that, you know, throughout the conversation or dialogue, please feel free to just state your name and ask your question. I want to make sure that this is open to you, the steering committee, and that you can fully participate as you would like. Moving from that, if you are at a computer and are logged into the webinar, we're going to move into the introduction section of the orientation, and we're going to be going through the NQF introduction slideshow PowerPoint. If you're unable to view the PowerPoint on your computer or not at a computer, this PowerPoint was emailed to you in a PDF format. And if you do not have it or would like to have it emailed to you again, please feel free to shoot Sarah and I an email, and we will send you out the PowerPoint. So moving forward, looking at the just initial meeting goals for this orientation conference call, we'd like to just orient you to current activities going on here at NQF and what processes and work plans we're working on. I'd like to orient you to the imaging efficiency project as well as the work plan and timeline for that. Moving on down past that, we're looking at discussing the scope of the imaging efficiency project and what we'll be specifically focusing on. Moving from there, we'll just be briefly discussing the upcoming meeting happening on the 23rd and 24th, going over some logistical information as well as the layout and plan that we have for the two-day meeting. After that, we're going to move into the discussion of the major evaluation process, and we do have on the phone with us Karen Pace, who's NQF's methodologist. And she will go over in full, just in greater detail, some of our major evaluation criteria that you will be asked to look at as well as grade. When we were on the phone yesterday with Dr. Gazelle and Dr. Peterson, they just indicated that it might be helpful to review the major evaluation criteria and what NQF expects a little bit in further detail on the phone. So we've tried to adjust some of the agenda to make sure that we have that time to cover that. Okay. Moving forward, so just looking kind of what NQF is, it's a not-for-profit organization founded almost, I guess, 10 years ago. Currently right now, our membership is over 400, and we're expanding greatly. I know members have been joining at a very high pace. Our membership here at NQF is broken into about 8 different stakeholder councils. Those councils range from purchasers, providers, there's a public health community agency council, consumers. So there's a broad range of different stakeholders involved in NQF at myriad of different levels. I think for a majority of individuals participating on this steering committee. There's a large portion of providers, but as well as purchasers, consumers, and so we try to create a diverse steering committee to really approach and review the measures that we have for the Emitting Efficiency Project. Just looking over the structure of NQF, we have a board of directors, and under that there's a consensus standard approval committee. We refer that to here at NQF as CSAC, and so those two entities are really a key portion of the endorsement process for measures with here at NQF, as well as providing oversight and guidance as the organization moves forward. There is the National Priorities Partnership, which you may have heard of, as well as on the large PDF that you were mailed, there is a section from a recent National Priorities Partnership publication looking at the national goals and priorities for healthcare as a whole and moving forward, in which the elimination of overuse or efficiency is a key portion of that. NQF is a convener for about 32 entities involved in the National Priorities Partnership, of which we're also a convener, but we also have a seat at the table. And it really integrates or meshes well with what the organization as a whole is trying to do. And so this project fits in very well with the National Priorities Partnership's national goals. Moving forward from there, just a different leadership network. We do have different departments within NQF. This department right now that you'll be working with, Sarah and I and Helen, we're in the performance measures. We also do have another department, which is our HIT department. Okay, so moving to the next slide, I just wanted to briefly orient you to NQF's website. If you haven't visited, you may want to go online, just check it out briefly. As we move to the project, you'll see on the page, if you have it up on your computer, on the right-hand side, there is an orange box where you can create a dashboard account. By signing into this, you can track and monitor different projects that are going on at NQF, as well as track this current imaging efficiency project, as well as get other information regarding NQF and its activities. Noting that, we will also, everything according and pertinent to this project will be emailed to you, but it is another way for members to track projects. All right, moving forward to the next slide, looking at NQF's mission, we have three bullet points here I'd like to cover. One is just to really focus on to improve the quality of American healthcare, or Americans' healthcare, by setting national priorities and goals for performance improvement. And then the key portion, which you will be participating in here, is endorsing national consensus standards for measuring and public reporting on performance. So that'll be a key portion of our work here and moving forward. The third bullet point, just promoting the attainment of national goals through education and outreach. That's really another portion of NQF that touches on that. Did I hear, was there a question?
Yeah, who pays for these?
A majority of our funding right now, we'll get into this later, but it's a very good question. A majority of the funding right now for NQF activities comes from a large block grant from HHS. However, NQF does collect membership dues from its members, and those dues vary to a great degree depending on the organizations, their net revenue, how large they are, what type of organization. And so those are the two primary ways that NQS receives its funding. This project, as I will discuss later on, is part of a HHS Health and Human Services contract. Did that answer your question? Or?
It did.
All right, wonderful. Thank you. Moving forward, just looking at evolution of quality measurement within the United States, as well as NQF, really looking to drive towards a higher standard of performance measures, raising the bar, and in doing so, and trying to raise the bar, looking at composite measures within part of the process. For this project, we don't have any composite measures that were submitted to us, but that is, composite measures are something that NQF is accepting and moving towards. Looking at measuring disparities within all areas that we work on here at NQF. And in part of that, looking at disparities, also tying in the work of the National Priorities Partnership and the areas where they focus on disparities or population health within that. We're looking at harmonizing measures across different providers in different settings. NQF has a large measure set. I think it's probably around 550 now or increasing up to 600. And so we're looking at taking the measures that we do have, looking at the measures that have been submitted, and really seeing where there are opportunities to harmonize those measures and really look for the best in practice measures. Another aspect within the kind of evolution of measurement is looking at issues of shared accountability within measurement across different patient-focused episodes of care, looking at different outcome measures, which is a key part of looking at shared accountability, the appropriateness of measures, which very much falls into this project, as well as looking at issues of efficiency as cost is, I would say, a relatively new avenue for NQF to be looking at. But it's definitely something pertinent to healthcare and health reform. And so cost as well as resource use are a major issue as we move forward within our measurement, agenda here at NQF. So just want to briefly touch on some of the NQF strategic goals. Really looking at setting out an endorsed set of standards. Yes, I'm sorry, is there a question? Okay, all right, I'm sorry, I apologize. I thought someone was raising a question. But NQF is really looking at providing a platform for measure endorsement that will be used across a myriad of different healthcare settings and providers across the United States. Looking for NQF to be the principal body that does that endorsement. Just kind of increasing one portion of NQF is really trying to push healthcare entities to looking at measurement for quality purposes would be another central role of NQF. And then really hoping that NQF be recognized as really a major driving force within healthcare and quality improvement within the United States. And your work on this project is directly tied to that. So moving forward to the growth of NQF-endorsed measures, I may just kind of briefly touch on some of these points. Feel free if you have any questions or you can review them on your own slides. But one key thing is just to expand the set of measures that we have. Some of these measures are used for pay for performance as well as other purposes, just measuring internal quality within an organization. Measures are used at different levels from individual physicians to hospital associations and organizations. As well as looking at measures that evaluate the patient's experience through different healthcare episodes. One new, area for NQF is looking at measures that are cross-cutting, so not just a specific focus area, but really touch all aspects through a healthcare system. And then really looking at NQF's portfolio of measures is really, you know, are the measures that we have, are those the right measures? Are there other measures out there? How are those measures going to be linked to electronic health records when that rolls out? What is the availability of data that's being collected? Is it publicly available and for the entities across the healthcare system to use and adopt? So those are some issues within NQF's measurement portfolio. Moving forward, just touching on some of the national priorities and goals, and this is really founded out of the National Priorities Partnership. So we're just focusing on really those high leverage areas that will allow us to achieve our greatest return on investment within aspects of the healthcare system. Really trying to align different focuses as well as efforts across different healthcare systems, trying to come up with common goals for quality improvement. And then really trying to accelerate the move towards quality improvement via a measurement platform, trying to get that widely adopted within large healthcare systems as well as small network providers. Moving on from there, just briefly looking over the National Priorities Partnership. We've discussed this a little bit, so we probably don't need to spend too much time on this slide. Yeah, actually, we've already kind of touched on this, so we'll move on. We're now on slide 11 for those who are following. Selecting just the national priorities, you can see just a diagram here of some of those high leverage areas. We obviously would fall in the bottom left one, waste removal, removal of waste, would be. So moving on to the next area, looking over some of the national priorities and goals. And for those of you who would like to receive the National Priorities Partnership in full, we can send that out, so that would be available to you. We just wanted to kind of hold off. I know there's a lot of information coming your way. You do have a section of the National Priorities Partnership that looks at issues of removing waste or eliminating overuse and touching on efficiency. So that is available to you at the end of the large PDF that was emailed to you. Touching over some of the other national parties partnership. Yes.
Just as a big picture, so the priorities that we're dealing with are only measures only dealing with waste and overutilization?
I guess we'll kind of touch on it later on. We look at some of the scope as well as domain areas within the efficiency project. But, I mean, there's waste, there's looking at efficiency, resource use, looking at issues of screening, duplication. The National Priorities Partnership just kind of had some high-level national priorities or goals to touch at, and in the document they kind of list out some further steps, and we will review those, I believe, later on in the slide set.
And they have quality and safety within theirs, and I thought some of the efficiency measures were trying to get at that, but it sounds like not really. It sounds like you're focusing on the efficiency piece of the National Priorities Partnership, not the safety or quality piece.
Well, I think we are looking at all aspects. We don't want, I guess, in one sense, you can have efficiency. I guess you can have a procedure that is less costly than another, but you have poor quality. Or you can have a procedure that is more expensive with higher quality. Within this project, we're really trying to look at those measures which are not only use the appropriate resources, but also yield a high level of quality. So quality, safety is very much tied into this project.
And just to add to this, this is Helen Burson. I just want to also point out that this project is specifically oriented towards efficiency of imaging services. We have other large projects specifically focused on safety, care coordination, many of the other aspects of healthcare quality. What we found in this project, as well as the prior project we had done in imaging, there's a fairly blurry line between efficiency of imaging and diving a bit over towards quality, and we didn't really push too hard on that. If they were good measures and they were in for evaluation, we put them within this group since it obviously has the right expertise at the table.
My question is not a theoretical one. The areas that I would sort of sense that would be my areas are mammography measures, for in general, have absolutely nothing to do with cost or efficiency. Ian, I appreciate sometimes they're tied together, but most of those measures were entirely quality-related, really pretty much independent of efficiency or relationship between them.
Right.
I'm just trying to get at, well, why are those in here if they're not completely off-topic?
Yeah, I'm not sure they're completely off-topic, but I see your point. I think they were trying to get at the idea of how does mammography testing result in other subsequent testing and how mammography results in the likelihood of a mammography being positive and the necessity for further studies, which would also be, we thought, still fit within
rubric. Some of the cancer detection rates have nothing to do with that downstream testing. So I'm just trying to get at what for the other measures as well.
Yes. We kept it quite broad intentionally. So if good measures came in and they seemed reasonable, we decided to bring them through this project as well.
Hello. Yeah, this is Dr. Dorsey. I, too, was confused by the term efficiency, and I also kind of asked Rebecca just said. Are we then also to consider quality folded in with efficiency? To me, efficiency is something per unit time that's done on a standard basis.
And I think the definition we're using here is not quite that tight. The project was titled Imaging Efficiency. We did a call for measures that we thought would be reflective of imaging efficiency, but as measures came in and were more reflective perhaps of the imaging quality that might have some relation to imaging efficiency, we decided to keep them. And if you remember, Dr. Dorsey, in the first project as well, there was a fairly blurred line between what was really the quality of imaging and efficiency of imaging, and we decided to just keep those measures in the project regardless.
Okay, but we can think of both anyway.
I think we're talking about imaging appropriateness overall.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, that's a good description.
Yes, yeah, thank you very much. I think that was something that we had discussed earlier, looking at imaging appropriateness. So I think that's a very good perspective to take when moving forward. I guess any other questions regarding that, or can we move forward? All right. So I think we'll probably just move past this national priorities kind of slide set. Feel free to take a look at that on your own, or if you do have any additional questions or would like to see the report in full, please just email Sarah or myself and we'll get that to you. So here are some areas on the screen, slide 14, just looking at potential areas of overuse, inappropriate medication use. I mean, this falls within the National Priorities Partnership, some things they listed. And I just wanted to bring you down to the third bullet point, which is unwarranted diagnostic procedures. So even within the National Priorities Partnership, they did touch on some issues that we may be looking at here within the efficiency project. Okay. Moving on to the next slide, this is just a brief screen capture of the National Priorities Partnership website. So if you are interested or would like to learn more about that, please feel free to visit that website. Moving on further, just looking at some of the health IT landscape here within NQF and some of the focus areas NQF is in. I think just probably for the sake of time and really wanting you, the steering committee, to have the opportunity to look at the major evaluation process. We may just skip this slide for now, but if you do have questions, please feel free to raise them or contact Sarah and I. So getting more specific within the imaging efficiency project, as discussed earlier, it is funded by Health and Human Services. The imaging efficiency project is really a subtask within a larger efficiency portfolio. And those other projects are really looking at resource use across different episodes of care. And that project is looking on producing a couple white papers and looking at really the framework for moving forward and looking at resource use across different episodes of care. Really looking kind of refining on the scope of this project, looking at hospital outpatient imaging efficiency. Typically in the documentation you'll see it'll just say imaging efficiency, but hospital outpatient, the focus area is kind of where we're concentrating on. And really looking kind of at the larger goal within the project is to expand NQF's current portfolio of imaging efficiency measures and then identify those gaps where we feel that we're lacking measures within the industry and really highlight those areas where we feel we need to see more measurement criteria come forward.
Ian, is the ED setting part of your outpatient?
Correct. Yes, it is.
Okay.
It is. And then we actually, Cameron, how many? I know there's at least three or four measures that specifically deal, or maybe it's two that specifically deal with the ED setting.
I think about 40% of imaging comes from the ED, and you have lots of ED folks on the call, so I just had to assume that that was going to be something you
would. Steve Cantor in Denver, it's 50% in our institution.
Okay.
Yeah, I think based on some national numbers, it looks like, I mean, it's a huge chunk, 40%.
All right. So just kind of narrowing down further, we kind of discussed this a little bit in brief before. But just the goals of the project are to identify, evaluate, and endorse additional measures suitable for public reporting and quality improvement. Just stop there for a second. Those two portions, public reporting and quality improvements, are key aspects of NQF in terms of endorsing measures. So all measures that come through must be looked at in terms of a public reporting purpose. As well as a quality improvement lens with that. So those are two key aspects to keep in mind when reviewing these measures, reviewing specifications, reviewing the developers. Have they made the information that's needed to actually measure the specific measure? Is that publicly available for individuals to look at? So it's then... I guess in looking at these measures that specifically address imaging efficiency in the hospital outpatient setting, our focus area for this project. And then as I mentioned earlier, really to identify gaps in existing hospital outpatient imaging efficiency measures. And as a committee, recommend for our report those gap areas which we feel we need to fill.
Ian?
Yes.
Don Recker, question. Is there sort of a very specific emphasis here when you use the word hospital outpatient? That sort of implies stuff that's paid for through the HOPS, Hospital Outpatient Prospective Payment System, as opposed to physician Part B, C schedule. Is that sort of also encompassed in your use of the word hospital outpatient, or is it really a little bit more general in terms of patterns of practice?
Ian, I'll take this one. Hi, Don. It's Helen. It's intended to be broader than that, although these measures are potentially measures that CMS might choose to use for some of their public reporting programs for those, you know, specific hospital outpatient departments going forward. But again, from the perspective of where we sat, we took a fairly broad view, but not surprisingly, a lot of those ED measures would be appropriate there as well.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Helen. Okay, so just looking at the scope with the efficiency project and really kind of the definition that we're using is looking at the interaction between resources used to deliver care and the quality of care delivered. So that's just a brief definition for the scope of the project. But as we mentioned earlier, I can't remember which individual from the steering committee mentioned it, looking at appropriateness of imaging efficiency is also a key aspect when reviewing the measures. So just kind of the scope continued for the imaging efficiency project, looking at specific outpatient imaging domains. So looking at issues of overlap, screening in terms of imaging, duplication of imaging procedures. Another key aspect of this project is looking at patient safety. Are patients being exposed to high levels of radiation? Looking at issues of negative studies. And then coordination of care between different facilities or with even in the same facility or between providers. And then the other one, I guess, just using different types of contrast imaging and then using it, doing an imaging procedure later on, not using contrast imaging. So those are kind of different domains that we'll be looking at or that were put out for the call for measures. All right. So just looking at current NQF-endorsed imaging efficiency measures, we have really 8 current endorsed imaging efficiency measures from the last imaging efficiency project that was conducted in 2008. And you can see on the screen if you have that up. If not, I'll read over it. Just the different kind of focus areas that that project touched. So they had some measures that dealt with imaging, cardiac imaging, mammography, measures that dealt with issues in the emergency department, patient safety, as well as coordination of care. And those measures that were in the 2008 imaging efficiency project were provided to you in a PDF format. So if you'd like to look at those, you're more than welcome to. And if you'd like, we can also mail that report out for those individuals who'd like to see that. Okay.
Was that the giant?
Yes.
Was that the giant PDF that you sent, the 5 megabyte?
No, I believe it was a PDF that was sent on February 12th, the Friday. It had a background document as well as an agenda for the call today. And if you don't have that, we can always get you the report or send that information back out to you.
Good. Thank you.
No problem. All right. Are there any other questions before we move forward?
This is Troy Fessinger. I had a quick question.
Yes.
Are you specifically excluding freestanding imaging facilities when we talk about outpatient hospital imaging?
And, Helen, I don't know. I do not believe so.
Because I'm thinking where I practice, there are freestanding imaging facilities. There are MRIs and CTs owned by often specialty surgical groups, and then there are hospital outpatient departments, and we utilize combinations of them for different purposes.
Yeah, this is Helen. From our perspective, it doesn't really matter the ownership of the facility. We're really looking at the service provided.
Okay.
And as you'll see when you go through the measure evaluation forms, there's actually a portion of it where they specifically indicate the level of analysis. In this instance, they're mainly going to be facility-level measures, and facility can be taken quite broadly.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. So just moving forward, we'll be looking at NQF's process in terms of evaluating measures as well as our process here for endorsement of measures. NQF's work here is really founded within a consensus development process. The process in moving forward is really for measure endorsement is a formal consensus development process. There's about 9 different steps to that process. We'll have a diagram in a little bit that goes over that. And of which the steering committee is highly involved in a large portion of those processes. And, and I just want to stress once again, it is consensus and consensus-building work. And so that'll be a key portion of our in-person meeting, really discussing in full the measures and the actual criterion for evaluating the measures. I guess just kind of moving down a couple bullet points, NQF's membership just is multi-stakeholder, and that should be reflected and is reflected on the steering committee. We have individuals from across the country in a wide array of different settings. We represent both the public and private sectors. And then I guess just kind of it for that slide, probably just moving forward. Here's just kind of a little bit more breakdown of our actual consensus development process. You may see this referred to as our CDP process, or the CDP for in just kind of an NQF term. So if you see that thrown around, that's what it refers to. You can see at the top, we're on slide 23, consensus development process. There's the specific project topics that we're focusing on, and then in yellow, there's a project steering committee. And for our work, we really are just having one steering committee. Some work here at NQF does have TAPs or technical advisory panels, but for our work here, we'll be just having a steering committee. And as you review the measure evaluation documentation that was sent to you in Word format, you'll see that there are sections for TAP review, and that's the, I guess, kind of sub-measure evaluation criteria. But because we are not having a TAP, and Karen will stress this later on, we are asking that individuals look over the information that has been typically regarded for TAPs. So the steering committee, from after our in-person meeting, will draft recommendations to move forward. That will be put out for review of members and the public. And then as moving kind of down to the process of drafting consensus standards, from what we, I guess, what the steering committee recommends, we'll move towards voting, and then CSAC and board approval. And then after that, there's an appeals process for individuals from the public to make any appeals publicly made regarding the measures that were selected for potential or for endorsement. And then after that process, the report will be published and move from there. Any questions regarding that process? Okay. All right, we'll move forward. So just looking at some of the roles of the steering committee members, like to just kind of highlight really each of you are representing different stakeholders, different entities, but in many cases you're acting as a key representative for the stakeholder group which you represent, and really hoping that you will bring that rich insight to the steering committee as well as when you review the measures submitted. I guess another role for really steering committee members is to work directly with NQF staff to achieve goals of the project. And then really another section in which Karen will be talking on later on is to evaluate candidate measures against formal measure evaluation criteria. So we will touch on that later on, but that's a key section of the process. So when we come together on the 23rd and 24th for our in-person meeting, we will have a strong foundation to move forward, hopefully, because we're hoping that you will have had the opportunity to review the measures that were assigned to you and really come to the meeting with the I guess, background and knowledge to discuss that measures in full and help the rest of the steering committee to understand some of the specific details of the measures so that we can make the appropriate decisions. Another role of the steering committee is just to make recommendations to NQF membership for endorsement. And then as we move through our process and things are made public online for individuals to comment on the measures that the steering committee has selected to move forward. We hope that the steering committee will work with NQF to formalize our response in terms of comments that were made to NQF. And then the co-chairs for this project, Dr. Gazelle, yourself, as well as Dr. Peterson, who is not joining us today, is really to represent the steering committee at the CSAC meeting and to really portray to the CSAC the steering committee's intentions as well as thoughts for why we chose why the steering committee selected the measures for endorsement that you did. And then really to respond to any direction from the CSAC or provide information as need be. Okay, moving forward, just the role of NQF staff. We can go over this just kind of in brief. I mean, it's really just to work with the steering committee and provide the necessary documentation and information for everyone on the steering committee to make a rational decision and response in terms of evaluating, measuring, and moving measures forward for endorsement. We're really here to provide really any insight and information on the NQF process, as well as to help you find the necessary materials that you feel is needed to evaluate the measures for the project. Any questions regarding our role here as NQF staff members?
I'm sorry, can I interrupt? I'm just joining. This is Kirk Spencer in Chicago.
Oh, all right. Welcome, Kirk. How are you doing?
We're good. Coming out of a very hectic clinic, sorry.
Oh, okay. Maybe do you have a specific question right now, or could we follow up maybe after the phone call?
Oh, yeah. No, I was just letting you know I was on.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you very much. I greatly appreciate it. Glad you can make it. So if we would like to just kind of move on to the next slide. I'm sorry, was there a question? Okay. All right. So this is just some more roles of NQF staff, and it's really just responding to the public, making sure that individuals are aware of what's going on, what's happening, so we can skip past that. And so now we're going to move into the section of really looking at NQF's measure evaluation criteria. So, and this is the information, it's on obviously on the PowerPoint here, but this information that we'll be going over in brief has been provided to you on the top of each measure evaluation form that you'll be reviewing, as well as there's a detailed PDF, detailed PDF document that Karen Pace will probably review briefly that goes over some of NQF's measure evaluation criteria in more depth for you to refer to. I'm sorry, this is just a slide just to kind of provide a brief background. We changed our measure evaluation criteria in 2008 and really just trying to link it to really the national priorities and really a higher level of measure performance. Go to the next slide. So here you can see just briefly on the slide what our old criteria was and some sections that were changed and really, I would say, bolstered to try to make sure that we are really getting the best in class in terms of measures. And if you look for measure evaluation criteria, when you're looking over the Word documents that were provided, really one of the first key steps will be importance. So that's importance to measure and report. So it's not importance to a specific focus area or to a specific hospital setting, or I'm sorry, hospital group. It's really the importance to measure and report for quality improvement. And so that's really a stop-go criteria. If they don't meet that, then really it's not something that we're really looking to consider as a measure for NQF. And likewise, something where we almost have across the healthcare field, we almost have 100% measurement and it's or 95 or whatever, that really may not fall in the importance category because we're really already meeting that. We're really looking on those issues that are important that will improve quality within the healthcare field. Then looking at the next portion, there's scientific acceptability within that. So we're really looking at the scientific rigor of the measure, what they went through, what they're looking at, the denominator that they're using within the measure. And then the next point is looking at feasibility. So is this something feasible to implement within a wide, to a degree a wide array of healthcare settings, or is this specific measure that has been submitted only applicable to this one setting and therefore won't be appropriate for really NQF? And as the field transitions to really using electronic health records, we're really looking at that step. Are measure developers thinking about that? What's the opportunity or potential to moving towards electronic set or platform? And then usability is the key kind of section of it. What are entities going to get out of this? How is it going to help them determine quality? Are they going to be able to use it? Is it feasible? Do they have the data, or does it require, very in-depth chart review of many different patients? So that's another aspect to keep in mind. So that's just a brief highlight of our measure evaluation criteria. Are there any questions before we move on to the next slide, or And if you do, I guess I apologize, if you do have questions, Karen Pace, our methodologist here, has a very strong grasp of this and really has been fundamental in developing a large portion of this, so she'd be able to provide any insight or answer questions to, probably to a greater degree than myself. So we can move to the last slide, and then I believe Karen's going to hopefully join us. I guess we're looking at this slide. I think we've probably touched on a lot of these issues. And just to really give time for Karen to speak and respond to any questions, I think I'd like to see actually, before we do that, I'd like to make one point. We do have some measures that were submitted to us that were untested. And in looking through the scientific acceptability portion of the measurement evaluation criteria process, there were some measures that were indicated that they were not tested. And so NQF has... a time-limited endorsement if those measures are deemed to be what the steering committee elects to try to move forward, but they have not been tested. There is the opportunity potentially for time-limited endorsement of those measures.
Ian, just to add to that point, this is Helen Burson again. The key thing with time-limited measures is they have to otherwise pass all of the other NQF evaluation criteria and sub-criteria with the exception of not having had reliability and validity testing done yet. And they're given a recent change in our policy. They're given up to 12 months now to complete the testing and submit it to NQF, at which point the time-limited stamp would be removed and it would just be endorsed and go through their usual maintenance cycle.
How often do you plan to update these, just to give me a...
The measure evaluation criteria updated on about an annual basis. We're actually in the midst of doing a pretty significant review right now of two particular areas. Just this week, we actually had a task force focused on the evidence for the measure focus. And in March, we've got a task force focused specifically on this issue of what is adequate testing and what does testing mean as we move into EHR-based measures. Certainly not the same kind of pulling charts and looking at them for liability and validity. And so we'll be doing some work on that coming up in mid-March. Both of those efforts led by Karen.
All right. Thank you very much. Are there any additional questions before we move forward?
May I just ask a question about the N in NQF? You mentioned that you have 400 members, and I'm just wondering, I mean, categorically you described who they were. And I'm just wondering geographically how inclusive it is in terms of small rural, large urban area.
I could take that. This is Helen again. It's an excellent question. You know, the members of NQF are only organizational members. There aren't any individual members. So there are many national organizations that are members of NQF, many of the national business groups, for example, the national health plans, most of the large professional societies, which many of you guys are part of on the clinician side, are all members of NQF. There are many regional and national health systems as well, and then there are some very large regional and national purchasers, consumer groups, and it really is quite a national breadth. I think the rural issue is, I suspect, given the reach of many of the national and regional health systems, is reasonably well covered as well.
All right. Thank you, Helen. Any additional questions, or are we ready as a group to move forward for the measure evaluation process? Okay. Just judging by the silence, I guess I'd just like to ask Karen, are you on the phone?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Great.
Are you set for us to transfer over the webinar to yourself? Or would you like, would you like me to just review briefly the measure evaluation process?
Right. Are you through your slides or?
We're through the slides. I'm trying to bring up the initial measure evaluation form that we have.
So okay.
Karen, this is Helen. Ian's done a fairly cursory review of the evaluation criteria, but obviously as you go through the form, it would be useful to take a deeper dive for this group.
Okay. So are you going to put up that sample measure form, Ian?
Yeah, we're just working on getting it up right now. Just one second.
Okay. All right.
Okay. All right. Individuals should be able to see NQF's major evaluation version 4.1 now.
Okay. Ian, I thought you were going to put up that sample that you sent me, the completed one.
Okay, I guess we were just looking over this right now. I thought you were going to bring that up when you talked about it. I was just going to discuss the actual...
Okay, well, you go ahead, then I'll be ready with the other one.
Okay. All right, thank you, Karen.
Hello.
So I just wanted to bring the steering committee's attention. Each individual on the steering committee has been sent out a Word document containing its Word document with two or three measures that were submitted to NQF. And really, this is just a blank version of what was provided to you in a PDF earlier. And Karen will go over later on an actual measure that was submitted. But I just wanted to go over some of the top criteria and information in terms of what the steering committee will be asked to do in terms of reviewing. Just kind of briefly in looking at the form, you can see there's yellow and pink highlights. The yellow has traditionally been, tagged to the technical advisory panels, but as I indicated, we do not have any technical advisory panels for this project. So really, all the information in terms of review, reviewing criteria, and reviewing sub-criteria will be up to the steering committee, which is also represented in pink. And so this top portion of the forum really just provides a brief overview. I know it's always a hard time. You know, you juggle back and forth between providing too much information and providing the right amount. So if in terms of reading this, you'd like more in-depth information, you can refer to NQF's measure evaluation criteria dated 2009 that has some more updated information. But now I guess we're just kind of going over and reviewing this form, just starting off at the top and just kind of looking through. Each of these forms is tagged in the top right-hand corner with the measure evaluation number, and that number goes throughout the document, so you can see that. And that number is what we will be using to refer to some of the measures. It just gets complex and confusing because some of the measures have the same name and title. As I indicated, there's the main really four criterion for the measures. Right now we're scrolling down through that. And this section, Karen will go over, and we talked over its importance, scientific acceptability. So those are some of those key things that we ask NQF staff to look at and see if they touched on. And if we, as we move up the document on the webinar screen, for your forms, you see filled in the gray section off to the right-hand corner if that major developer met those conditions when they submitted to us. And so there'd be a check, yes or no. And Karen will kind of, as she goes over it, you'll be able to see some of that.
Gone through our measures that we've been assigned and sort of add comments before the meeting next week?
Yes, that would be tremendously helpful. Either it's efficient for you to do it on the actual document provided, or if you'd like to do it on another document and just make sure you have what your comments respond to. But whatever is most, efficient for you in terms of facilitating the discussion.
And I
don't expect us to do this for all of the measures that everyone's discussing.
No, and I believe I apologize if this wasn't sent out to the group. There were specific primary review groups signed. Each individual has about two measures that they had been specifically emailed, and so those are two measures that we're asking you to review.
Well, can I ask? I got the PDF file containing all 17 measures.
Mm-hmm.
Then it said a Word file would come with my specific measures in the next email.
Correct.
But I've not gotten that.
Okay. And I'm sorry, your name is?
Spencer.
Okay. All right. I apologize for that. We will make sure we get that out to you. Has there been any other individuals on the steering committee who had a similar problem?
That's it. That's
Hello, this is Dr. Dorsey. Can I just ask a very basic question? How are these questions solicited, and why did people respond to them? What was the connection between solicitation and receipt?
Okay. Ian, why don't I go through the measure evaluation, and I can answer that question.
Okay.
Can you...
We're giving you the control to adjust the webinar.
Okay, so I want to show my screen. So can you see the measure evaluation criteria?
Yes.
We can.
Okay, yes. Great. All right. So the questions we asked the measure developers or measure submitters to respond to are directly related to our measure evaluation criteria. So that's the basis for asking the questions. So we have criteria, as Ian was mentioning, importance to measure and report, scientific acceptability of the measure properties, and each one of these criteria have specific sub-criteria that help our reviewers to identify whether or not they've met the criteria. So that's the basis for the questions and hopefully what the responses are. So I'm going to just put one of these measures up on my screen. So you should be able to see this is measure IEP-001. And what we've done with measure evaluation forms is that we've pulled into this form the actual information that was submitted about the measure. So the text that appears in blue, if you're looking at this on the screen, is exactly what we received from the person submitting the measure in response to that particular question. The other thing that we've done with this form is we've embedded the actual measure evaluation criteria language within the form. Right now I have my word option set to show these in balloons, but if you see here this comment, and we're using the word commenting function, this is actually the language for criteria 1A about the measure focus addresses a specific national health priority or high impact area. So we've tried to embed this within the form so that as the committee reviewers go through the information that was submitted, you can quickly reference what our actual evaluation criteria are so that you can help make a determination whether they've met that criterion or not.
So where to read that and say that you guys sought this evaluation criteria, you gave it an 8 based on these criteria of, you know, why it met a priority area or something like that?
I'm sorry, what is your question?
It looks like this particular example has a rating of 8, that this is a high impact area. There seems to be
I think that's the G from rating.
Right. Yeah, that's. I'm sorry. This says
okay.
Evaluation rating. It's a G. It's unclear on this.
And what does a G mean?
It doesn't. It's just the end of rating. See, it's R-A-T-I-N-G, rating. It just wrapped around.
Sorry, Sting. Yeah.
Sorry. So the staff have not done any rating of these. This is what we're asking.
That's what we're doing.
Right. And we're using, I'm going to go back to the top again just to orient you to what we're asking you to do. So as I said, this form includes all of the information that was submitted. If there were attachments, those would have been sent to you as well. If the submitter added any attachments for additional information. But we've asked the measure submitters to really put the essential information that demonstrates their measure meets the criteria within the form. Now, I'm sure you'll come across some examples where they may not have done that, but that's what we do ask them to do. And so for each of the sub-criteria and major criteria, we have a rating scale, and the rating scale is that we're using is to identify the extent to which you think the criterion was met. C means completely, P partially, M minimally, N not at all, and there are a few of the sub-criteria that might be not applicable. Most of them are applicable to every measure, but for example, risk adjustment is generally not applicable to a process measure that doesn't need risk adjustment. Or justifying exclusions could be not applicable if there are no exclusions for a particular measure. So there are a few things that not applicable might apply, but most of the criteria should be rated completely, partially, minimally, or not at all.
Can I ask a question, Dr. Dorsey? Again, this particular example that you have, I see in part of the description, says it should be paired with other evaluations. Are we to consider the main consideration along with these other recommended measures or not?
No, we really, this first review should be looking at it as itself. Does this measure stand alone? Because the it was submitted as a measure that was asked to be endorsed, and so even if ultimately it would be best to be paired and reported with other measures, it still has to meet the criteria individually.
Thank you.
Okay, so the very first part of the form is just some descriptive identifying information. The conditions are things that staff check on, because if these are not met, then we can't even send the measure to the steering committee to even consider. So those are things that would have already been reviewed by the staff. So I'm going to move on to importance to measure and report. And this, as Ian was mentioning, is a must-pass criterion. It's we really feel that if measures are not important enough to expend resources to measure it and then report it, then we really don't care about the rest of the criteria, that if the steering committee thinks it doesn't meet this threshold criterion, then the other criteria really aren't important to look at.
Question?
Yes.
This is Roger Snow. I think I understand that this is absolutely central and critical. Are the order of these roughly a rank ordering of their centrality? That is, it absolutely has to pass number one, and number two is very important but not quite as important as number one, and so forth. Is that the case or not?
That's a good question. And obviously, our threshold criterion of importance is the first one. And the rest of the criteria are, we think, in a logical hierarchy, and that's the order that we want the reviewers to look at them. So if it's important, then the next thing that needs to be met is it a sound measure from a measurement standpoint? And so basically, is it a reliable and valid measure? Can you make valid conclusions about quality of care based on how that measure has been constructed? And then after that, usability, because if you determine that this is not a reliable and valid measure, then it really can't be usable. How would you use it to make decisions if you can't rely on the accuracy and validity of the information? So they logically follow in a logical pattern, but at this point, only the importance to measure and report is considered kind of a must-pass criterion before you would move any further.
Thanks.
Okay. So there's three components under importance to measure and report. And the first one is that we kind of generally refer to it as high impact, and this could be demonstrated by meeting a specific national priority partner's goal, and staff would have put in the specific goal most of the time here in the gray area. But then we also ask the measure submitter to really summarize the evidence that highlights that it's high impact. And high impact really means, it can mean a variety of things. It can mean it affects a large number of people, But you could also have measures affecting a smaller number if, you know, the consequences of quality problems are very high or there's a very high resource use. So there's a variety of ways that someone could demonstrate that a measure is high impact. But we ask them to actually provide some data to you so that you can judge whether you, as a committee, agree that this is a high impact area that should be considered for measurement. And basically what, you know, we asked, as Ian was mentioned, he's given you assignments for primary and secondary reviewers for a smaller number of measures, and we really expect those primary and secondary reviewers to get to review these measures completely, rate them on each of these sub-criteria and major criteria, and then you will be opening the discussion for the measures when you come together, but ultimately the final decisions are made by the entire committee. So we do need, you know, the entire committee to have some familiarity with all of the measures that together you'll be rating and deciding whether to recommend them for endorsement. Okay, so high impact, usually that most submitters don't have any problem providing information that's useful to making that assessment. And I'm going to just move down. The second category that we just label opportunity for improvement, and you'll see here again that our criteria is actually demonstration of quality problems and opportunity for improvement. So that means data demonstrating considerable variation or overall poor performance in the quality of care across providers and or population groups. So we first give them an opportunity to just in general kind of give their summary of what they think the benefit will be of implementing this measure. But we do want them to provide some data that demonstrates there's either variation in performance or overall poor performance. Again, you know, we need to think of these in the context of NQF is endorsing measures that are intended for use for both public reporting and quality improvement. And so, as you all know, and all of the stakeholders very much are aware, that measurement requires time and resources, as well as collecting data, reporting the data, establishing websites for people to access the data. And so the reason for the importance is for us to really try to get at the measures that are most apt to help us move forward in terms of improving healthcare and ultimately improving health. So that's why it's been made a threshold criterion. And if we have something that is an important topic, but there's really no issues with poor performance, then that may not be the best choice for a measure.
Hard to come up with those examples in medicine, isn't it?
Pardon me?
It'd be hard to come up with an example of that, I think.
Of
doing a really good job across the board.
Well, but we often don't get very good information that helps us, that sometimes we don't get good information that demonstrates there's really an opportunity for improvement.
Yep.
So, and also, you know, that's why we have a group of experts reviewing these, because you also are familiar with the field and can, you know, bring that perspective to your review.
I have a question.
Yes.
About the assignment of primary review measures.
Yes.
And kind of along those lines, is there any flexibility in those assignments? For example, as an emergency physician, I'm not going to be involved with mammography, for example. And So if I were assigned that topic, I might be better informed, or I might be able to contribute more in an area that's more directly, you know, in my purview.
Right. Certainly, let Ian know, and he, you know, he can try to make some adjustments if you were assigned to something, but there's somewhere else that you really feel that your expertise would lend itself to a better review.
Thank you.
Okay.
This is Ray Gibbons. I also have a question. I got my email, and it says you've been assigned these two measures to review. It does not tell me whether I'm primary or secondary. And so how do I know that?
Okay, and I may be wrong. You know, maybe you're all primary reviewers for a set of measures. So, Ian, was everyone just assigned as primary reviewers?
Correct, yes, Karen, and okay. I apologize.
Oh, it's fine. It depends on the project size and number of measures. So.
Correct, and we just had a small, I mean, relatively 17 compared to some projects that have 45, I don't know, 40 or plus. So we will send out, I guess, after talking, if individuals would like to email me if they see other specific measures that they would like to review rather than those that have been assigned. We can try to see what we can do to adjust and really make so that we have those individuals reviewing measures that are within their area or scope of expertise. So if we do get emails from individuals, we'll try to adjust the list, and I'll resend it, and it will specifically indicate what measures you'll be reviewing, and we really are doing it in terms of groups, not specifically a primary reviewer or in secondary, but that each individual within that group setting is a primary reviewer.
Good. Okay. Thank you.
So this is Ray Gibbons. If I can follow up again, does that mean
yes.
that there is no one else assigned to these two measures, or are there other people assigned to these two measures?
It would be those two individuals who are reviewing it that are assigned to those measures that will specifically lead and help elicit some details regarding the measures during the steering committee meeting, which at that point everyone will be looking at the measure and really evaluating it. But the two or three individuals, depending upon the breakout, will be the specific primary reviewers for that measure.
And do you expect us to try to have contact with one another prior to the meeting or not?
No, there's going to be at least two reviewers for each measure, and there's no need for you to try to coordinate. You're certainly free to contact one another if you choose, but that's not really an expectation because you'll be coming to the meeting and sharing your viewpoints at the meeting.
If I could add, we talked about this yesterday on the call. You're also free to talk with others who you might feel are expert in this in the specific topic to help formulate your own opinions.
And can Ian, can you just leave your email address with us somehow before the end of the call?
Yes, I can. And it'll be, I believe, on the last slide, but I will send that out to everyone. I'm sorry, I haven't been in the office, and with the snowstorm, I haven't been here for like the past week, so desperately trying to catch up.
Right. Okay. So the third area under importance to measure and report is about the evidence that supports the focus of the measure. And what we mean here is that, for example, for a process measure, what is the evidence that that particular process that's being proposed be part of a national voluntary consensus standard? What that process that is being proposed to be measured, what evidence is there that that process improves outcomes or is linked to the desired outcomes? So that's what we're looking for here. So, you know, a lot of measures that come to NQF are based on clinical practice guidelines. If that's the case, we'd like to know the specific guideline. We want to know how that evidence was rated, and, you know, is there really a strong evidence base? And this gets at the whole issue of whether it can be a valid indicator of quality if there's little evidence to say that that particular process that's being proposed to be measured really improves outcomes or improves health, then, you know, it's probably not the right time to have that as a process measure. So that's what we're asking for in this area. And Helen mentioned a little bit ago that we have some task forces that are helping us look at our measure evaluation criteria, and this whole area of evidence is one in particular that we've been asked to provide more guidance, hopefully more standardization. There's been a interest in having more standardization, and you know, our current evaluation criteria really do recommend using a evidence rating schema like that used by the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force, and we actually have some links and information about what the grading system is. But the reality is right now in our current environment that there are multiple grading systems, and especially the clinical practice guidelines developed by specialty societies have multiple ways of grading. But we really do want the submitters to try to provide as much information about what the evidence is that backs it up and, disclose that. You know, is this just based on expert opinion, or is there, more solid evidence linking it to desired outcomes? Okay. All right. So I'm not going to necessarily be rating what's in this particular submission, but if anyone sees something that they want to mention or bring up, we can certainly talk about it. But that's what our importance criterion is. So the way this form is set up, I'll just back up here a minute. So for each of those criteria, 1A, 1B, 1C, we have the rating scale for you to identify whether you think, you know, what was submitted completely, partially, minimally, or not at all meets that criterion. And then after you've looked at each of the sub-criteria, we have some summary things. So what strengths and weaknesses did you identify? And then ultimately, would you think that the measure met the major criterion? So after you look at, you know, each of those sub-criteria, overall, do you think that the measure met the importance to measure and report criterion? And because this is a threshold, we ask you to just say yes or no. It met it or it didn't, and what your rationale was. Okay. So then we go on to scientific acceptability of measure properties. And there is sometimes some confusion about when we talk about scientific acceptability. We really are focusing on the measurement properties in this section of the criteria, because we talked about the clinical evidence under importance sub-criteria 1C. So this starts with precise measure specifications, and first of all, we need that to be considered a measure, but having, you know, clear, unambiguous measure specifications also lays the foundation for getting consistent and reliable results. So there are a lot of questions about the actual measure specifications. What's the numerator? What's the denominator? What are the coding instruction, you know, codes, if those are being used, any instructions that go along with identifying numerator and denominator. So one of the things that you need to look for here is, you know, if you had this information, could you take it back and actually implement this measure? Could you identify the patients for which this measure would apply, and would you be able to identify the patients that met the numerator condition? So we also ask about exclusions. If there's risk adjustment, what type of risk adjustment, and what method? But here we're just asking for the specifications, and then we'll get into the specific testing in just a moment. We ask about the data source, where you are supposed to get the information for computing the measure, and the different setting that it applies to or levels of analysis. So, and this is all information that we would put in our database that people could access if they wanted to find a measure on this particular topic and be able to go and implement it. Okay, the rest of the this section on scientific acceptability and measure properties really does get into measure testing, and primarily relates to reliability and validity, and I'll just kind of run through these. So the first is reliability testing. Has the measure been tested to demonstrate that it is reliable? And this whole section on measure testing, as Helen mentioned, is another area that we're going to be convening a task force, because we've been asked to provide more specific guidance to both measure developers and to our committee reviewers. We have not set, you know, specific types of testing, because a lot of that is somewhat determined and can vary depending on the type of measure, the type of data that are available. So we're going to ask our task force how far we can go with being more specific, but some examples of reliability testing would be inter-rater reliability, you know, inter-abstractor reliability. In this particular example, it looks like they did some test, retest, and inter-rater reliability. So the thing that I've noticed in just, you know, briefly looking at this particular measure submission is it looks like they've put some conclusive statements but not the actual testing results.
It's going to be too early.
And so what we really are asking for are, you know, if there was inter-rater reliability testing, what was the percent agreement, what was the Kappa statistic, et cetera. So they may have provided some attachment. We've tried to encourage measure submitters to put that information in the form to make it more accessible and facilitate your review, but those are the kinds of things you might want to pay attention to. Okay, 2C is then validity testing, and this is an area that is typically problematic. Validity testing does, you know, it seems that a lot of measure developers haven't had the time or resources to do formal validity testing. Our criteria do recognize that you might rely on face validity and suggest that if that's the case, it should be systematically assessed. But one of the things that to think about with validity is, first of all, a measure has to be reliable before you can say it's valid. And we're really talking about validity of, you know, can you conclude by looking at measure scores that one provider is, you know, has poor quality and another has high quality, that those kinds of conclusions that you might make about quality of care based on those measure results, is that a valid conclusion? So that's the direction we're thinking in terms of validity. Okay, exclusions being justified, as I said, if there are no exclusions, as in this case, then you would check not applicable. But if there are exclusions that have been identified in the measure specifications, then we'd want them to actually be justified. This has been an area that has become increasingly problematic and brought up to NQF through various channels over the past couple years that exclusions add to data collection and measurement burden. They sometimes present barriers when we're thinking about moving to electronic health records and being able to pull measures from electronic health records. And our criteria are really that the exclusions should be evidence-based, should be clinically indicated, and really should be those things that will make a difference in measure scores. So sometimes there's a tendency as clinicians to think about all the exceptions that could possibly enter into a measure calculation, but we're encouraging developers to really think about exclusions that are most appropriate and, you know, clinically appropriate, and then also that would really make a difference in measure scores before they start including a long laundry list of every potential exclusion. Again, risk adjustment, this would be not applicable in this particular measure, which is a process measure. And then the next one is about identification of meaningful.
Can you go back for a second?
Yes.
Why isn't it applicable? Because they said it wasn't applicable? Or?
No, this is actually a process measure. And generally, now there could be exceptions, and that's why it's hard to really, you know, talk in hard and fast rules. But generally, process measures do not need to be risk adjusted. Outcome measures generally do need to be risk adjusted.
But this one happens not to be a process measure, but you just meant if it was one?
Like right. Well, let's see. This one.
I think this is an outcomes measure.
It's an outcomes measure.
Oh, this one is an outcomes measure. Okay, I'm sorry.
Although this is Mike Backus, I'm incredibly happy that the sample you're going through is mine.
Oh, okay.
I mean, this particular measure is meaningless without adjusting for a patient's age. And
right, you're right. This is, I'm sorry, wasn't.
That's okay. It was just in general process.
But yes, and so it should be, a risk adjustment is definitely applicable. So our criteria is that outcome measures should be risk adjusted or a rationale be presented that the committee can evaluate whether they accept the rationale for no risk adjustment. So in this particular case, let's see what it says again. Sorry. Back in let me just go back up here to specification.
This measure is looking at the for people that are BI-RADS 0, 4, and 5, whether it turned out that they had a malignancy.
Right.
So, you know.
I think it was talking about the cancer detection rates unless we switched measures.
Right, but.
And that's that needs a denominator, and that denominator needs to be age-adjusted, otherwise it's meaningless.
Right. There's like three or four of them stacked together here.
Got it.
Right. So this particular measure is looking at whether the positive mammograms actually end up being a actual positive cancer. Is that what you're saying?
That's what it reads.
Right.
Not really a rate.
So I don't know that I would consider that an outcome. It's supposed to be measuring the effectiveness of the mammogram diagnosis or mammogram findings, right?
Well, sort of. But, you know, there are confounders in that. I mean, if every positive mammogram automatically got a biopsy, that would be one thing, but there's slips between that cup and that lip. So you may be titering other elements in the healthcare system and its efficiency when what you're looking to do is to see how good the x-ray was.
Okay. So, and I, sorry, I don't want to get too much into the details of this measure, and those are the things that you'll need to be trying to sort out, but so let me back off of this measure and give a more clear-cut example of a process measure. So if a process measure, for example, is to give a certain medication to a certain patient population, process measures tend not to need to be risk adjusted because you've defined the appropriate population to begin with, the denominator population. And so you've defined the population that should receive it, and so that's what you're going for, and you don't need to risk adjust because all of those patients that should receive it are in your denominator population. Versus outcomes where we all know that outcomes are influenced by patient factors that are already present before you even started giving the care, their age, the severity of their condition, the presence of comorbidities. And so outcome measures, if we're going to use them for public reporting and being able to make fair comparisons across providers, they need to adjust for those potential differences in severity of cases that the different facilities are taking care of. So our criteria are definitely if it's an outcome measure, there should be risk adjustment or a rationale that's submitted of why measure developer thinks risk adjustment is not needed. And that would be something the committee would evaluate and see whether they would accept that rationale for no risk adjustment. And an example where we might, and I should also explain that when we talk about risk adjustment, risk stratification is one potential approach to that. It doesn't have to only be like a statistical risk model, but that's what we're trying to get at with risk adjustment. Okay, identification of meaningful differences in performance. What we're getting at here is really how, when you come up with these scores, is the measure developers suggesting a type of analysis that would actually allow someone to make, again, to make these judgments about is there a difference in quality? So this is a difficult area that we'll be definitely examining coming up. But for example, if a measure is based on a sample of patients, then there's definitely some measurement error from sampling or sampling error. And, you know, should there be confidence intervals or should there be some statistical significance testing? So this is just asking, you know, if they are recommending or if their measure is computed in such a way to make sure that you can identify those differences. Okay, and the last, comparability of data sources. If a measure is specified and says you can compute this measure using claim forms if you do, you know, use these codes, or you can go into the medical record if you get particular information, or you can compute this measure using electronic health records if you use these fields, et cetera. If the measure submitter says you can measure this any way, you know, that we've specified here, what we're asking is if people choose one or the other, do they get comparable results? So if you say it can be measured using all of those different types of data sources, would you end up, you know, getting the same results or close to the same results doing that? Okay, and then the last one is about disparities in care. And that reminds me to make one other mention about risk adjustment. in our criteria, we have really laid out that for the most part, we do not believe that patient factors that have been associated with disparities in care should be put into statistical risk models. So typically, these will be race, ethnicity, socioeconomic status, potentially gender, depending on the topic. But our suggestion is that rather than potentially risk adjusting away disparities in care, to actually stratify a measure by those factors so that they can be identified, but also if, I guess, particular socioeconomic status, you know, that like comparisons could be made for facilities with in similar economic situations. So, again, this is an area that NQF is interested in disparities in care and trying to have measures that will move us forward in identifying and ultimately reducing disparities in care. But you probably won't see a lot of measures that are specified that way initially. But, you know, our criteria are you know, also looking to the future and what we would like to see in measures. And particularly if early up in the important section, a measure submitter identified that there were disparities in care for a particular topic, then, you know, we ask that they identify, you know, how they would suggest the measure be used in that situation. Okay, I'm going to stop there and see what questions you have about the criteria under scientific acceptability and measure properties.
This is Ray Gibbons. I have more of a logistic question, which
okay.
The staff hopefully can help with. The measures that I've been asked to review specifically cite additional evidence repeatedly that's posted on a secure FTP server that's only accessible during business hours Monday through Friday. And I have now tried four times today to access that server unsuccessfully. Can someone help me?
Yes. Ian will.
Yes, Dr. Gibbons?
What? Yes.
I will look, I guess, at your contact information and try to give you a call to see if I can walk you through the steps. I know I had a problem with it. It sometimes involves the browser that you're using. So I will specifically call you and try to see if we can work through those steps.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I probably, Zaret Stillman, I probably have the same issue.
Okay. All right. I will try to get a hold of both of you and see if we can work through it.
No, I may have the same issue. I haven't tried it yet.
Oh.
Okay.
There should be, I believe, within the documentation, probably the first time that the major developer references the HTTP site. They provide instructions to that. If not, it might be at the end.
Oh, it's in the document. I've just followed the instructions, and I can never get on.
Okay. All right. So I will specifically reach out and see if we can get that sorted out and go from there.
Right. And I see that we're about out of our time. I'm going to just make a couple comments about usability and feasibility. You know, those are much more kind of qualitative and experiential information that we ask the submitters to provide. Occasionally, we have measures like under usability where there's been more formal testing. For example, CMS sometimes has had focus groups, consumer focus groups that particularly review measures, and they have some good information there. But again, under usability, I'll emphasize we're really looking at usability for both public reporting and quality improvement. And we're asking the submitters if the measure is currently in use for either of those. And if not, what are the plans to make sure that the measure does get used if it's NQF endorsed? We've had some clarification from our board this past fall that to really affirm that the intent is public reporting of these results. And so if a measure is not currently publicly reported, which most aren't when they first are submitted to NQF, what are the plans to accomplish that by the time of measure maintenance? So there really is a big emphasis on NQF endorsing measures that are ultimately going to be used in those regards. And so again, you know, there for each of the sub-criteria, we ask you to, you know, rate the extent to which you think it was met, and to, you know, overall rate the criteria for all of these as completely, partially, minimally, and not at all. And feasibility, same way. There's several sub-criteria that we've asked for information about, and ask you to see to what extent you think that information actually meets our criteria. So I'm going to stop there because I know we're at the end of your time, and see if there are any other burning questions. Certainly, you know, feel free to send Ian email questions, and if there's something that I need to follow up on, I certainly will. You certainly are free to email me directly, kpace@qualityforum.org, and I'll stop there and see if there are any other questions.
This is Mike Backus. Just real quickly, I know I think there's 17 or 18 measures, and at the previous version you accepted 8. Is there a goal of, you know, 8 more or 5 more? Is there any kind of target number that you're kind of aiming towards?
No, not really. You know, we do want measures that are the best measures that represent that where measure scores will actually represent the amount of quality or can represent the quality of care provided. We don't want duplicate measures on the same topic area. And, you know, I don't know this measure set like Ian will in terms of whether there are duplicate measures. If there are, then the steering committee will be asked to choose the best out of the duplicate measures. Or, and when I say duplicate, it doesn't mean exactly the same, but if they're focused on the same, you know, numerator or, you know, target condition or target process, target outcome, and the same target population, we wouldn't want to endorse multiple measures on the same thing.
Also available.
Thanks.
For
okay.
Handouts. So anyway, I will try to reach.
Okay. You. Anything else?
Can you just go back over the timeline for this?
Okay.
Is the expectation that this is going to be wrapped up when?
Ian, I'll let you get in there. Your meeting is next week, right? So you want people to come to the meeting with these evaluated.
Correct, and then we have a full timeline of the project, which, Karen, when you give up power of the webinar, we can post, and so every individual will be able to see the rough timeline for the entire project. And thank you very much, Karen. I greatly appreciate your help in working through that process. So, and as Karen indicated, if any members from the steering committee have any additional questions, please feel free to ask Sarah or myself, and if the questions do need to get forward to Karen, we can speak with Karen or provide you with her direct contact to work those questions out.
Ann?
Yes.
Hey, this is Kirk Spencer. I don't think I've gotten any emails from you, so if you could just shoot me your email so I could have it. Are you the best person for 5 questions? Because I'm just starting to, you know, learn about this with you guys. I'll spend some time on it this weekend, but if I have questions Monday, can I contact
you? I would, yes. Please feel free to email me, and I apologize. I wasn't here last week, and Sarah was in the office, and so I was doing things remotely, but I didn't have access to everyone, so Sarah had been sending things out.
Sure. So just send me an email. I did find my thing. I missed it in my email, so you don't have to send that to me.
Okay.
I have another question, though. It looks like best test one I got actually has 3 of the 17 measures within it. Is that correct? I should do all 3. It's basically, you know, inappropriate stress test ordering, but it has, the low risk, the post-PTCA, and has the preoperative evaluation are all listed within there. But those are actually separate measures when I look at the PowerPoint presentation. No? Hello?
Hello?
Hello? Yes?
Did you hear that?
Yeah, I'm sorry. It wasn't going through. So you're looking at the specific...
So it looks like the measure that I got, which is on stress testing.
Okay.
Three things under it. But those three things are separate points when you look at the 17 criteria. So this one's really three? I should be doing all of those. Because in the 17, it includes stress testing and low risk, stress testing post-PTCA, stress testing pre-op. But I think those three things are part of the – each one of those is one of the 17 in the PowerPoint.
I'm not specifically sure, I guess, in terms of just looking at this right now. Is there any way – and this is Dr. Spencer, right?
Yeah.
Dr. Spencer, could we just follow up later on with the phone call just so I could look over the information in full and provide you with a better answer?
I'll stay on.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you. Are there any additional questions before moving forward? I know we're running over time, and I greatly apologize. So I know everyone here on the steering committee has busy schedules and would like to keep with them. If we could just briefly review the timeline. I believe everyone on the webinar should be able to see it. And this is provided within the PowerPoint that was given to you in PDF format. You can see that our the happenings beforehand, December and January, our in-person meeting here in February, and then the processes in terms of report and comment period happening in April and May, NQF member voting happening later on in June through the July, the measures being pushed forward to CSAC on July 15th, then moving forward for board endorsement on the 28th of July, and then there's our 30-day appeal process in August. So that's kind of a brief overview of the project timeline. We can definitely provide more information on that if you are interested. And if there's not any immediate burning questions, I think we'd probably just like to kind of wrap things up here. I don't know, Dr. Gazelle, do you have any comments as we close down, and then we'll open it up to member or public comment?
No, I don't have any comments. I look forward to working together with everybody. I'm running late for a meeting, so I'm going to have to sign off myself.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you very much. I greatly appreciate it. For those individuals who are able to stay on the line, you're more than, I guess, it would be appreciated, but if you do have other burning issues to attend, I understand. I guess, is the operator online to see if we can open up to public comment?
Yeah, just one suggestion, Gavin Setson, for when you send out your email or any other answers to specific questions, they're probably issues that affect everybody in the group. So if you could copy each member, I think that would be helpful.
Okay.
Thank you.
Noted. Thank you. Crystal, are you online?
Yes, sir, I am.
Crystal, do you know, is there anyone from the public who's online who would like to make a comment?
Well, all of the lines are open.
Okay. All right. Judging by no response, I'll take that. No one's there to make a comment. Sarah and I will regroup here, gather necessary information to resend out to individuals on the steering committee, and we'll get that to you ASAP. Please feel free to respond to me if you have any direct and burning questions, and we'll get those answered. And Dr. Spencer, I will call you directly, as well as I believe Dr. Gibbons and Dr. Stillman to address some issues maybe with the FTP links. So.
And Dr. Snow.
Oh, and Dr.
So this
Snow.
Is Judy Zerzan. It looks like mine has that too. I haven't tried, so I don't know if there's extra information or if you discover something that is not helpful. I actually have to sign off, but
okay.
In the event that we all have struggles getting on the FTP.
Okay, I will work on getting an email out immediately, just going over some of the steps that I had to work through to get on the FTP sites and send that out and then try to follow up with phone calls as well.
Do we have a hotel yet?
Yes, I believe you're going to be in Georgetown. I don't know the name of it. It's over on M Street.
It's a Hilton.
This is Judy. I actually got an email saying it was going to be the Hilton.
Right, the Hilton on Connecticut Avenue.
Right.
By DuPont Circle.
Yeah.
Well, be careful. There are two Hiltons. It's the one that's further out. It's 1919 Connecticut Avenue, Northwest.
Is that going to be sent out to all of us?
It should be sent out by our meetings department. I don't, I guess, directly control that. So it should be sent out to everyone who's on the email distribution list.
If you could make sure that gets sent out today, because I travel on Monday the entire day.
Okay.
And one of the things we don't have, it wasn't there. I think they're making the reservations, but there's no confirmation numbers yet. That's an important thing to have.
Well, the email that I got says that you need to fax a form back, and it needs to be faxed back today.
I already did that, but I don't have any information about where I'm going to be staying.
That email has a little where it says Hilton, you can click on that, and that gets you what I just told you.
It says the Hilton on Connecticut, 1919.
Good. And you can email it back. I emailed mine back, and they were fine with that.
So, yeah. Good. Thank you. And Ian, you're going to send out your email address as well?
Correct, yes.
Okay.
Any additional questions?
Thank you.
All right, thank you guys very much. I look forward to seeing you on the 23rd and 24th.
Okay, thank you, Ian. Bye-bye.
Have a good day.
Bye.
Dr. Spencer? Dr. Spencer?
I believe he's disconnected.
Okay. Crystal, I guess, are we the only people then? Everyone's done?
Yeah, we have Charmin Stevens still online.
Ian?
Okay. Yes, Charmin.
I was trying to ask a question, which is the schedule.
Correct.
It's not up on the site yet as to when the day is starting.
Oh, the schedule's not up?
No, Ian. Schedule's not up.
Okay. It should be posted today. It's starting at 9 a.m. Here at NQF. I have it open right now. I'll email it to you immediately.
Okay. The other thing, Ian, is I sent you, because I assume it's the CMS, you know, submission, the FTP secure site. You know, and we did that because that's what you all said you preferred. But I sent you all of the stuff that's posted on that site. The easiest thing may be to just send it to people.
That's true. I'll have to go back and look. I know it's challenging if they're using different platforms of technology.
We do that because that's what you all said was your preference.
Yeah, I know that. I know that. It's probably a transition here for NQF in terms of accepting attachments in different platforms or just having an access site online. So I will get that sorted out, and we should be ready to go from there. So
you have an email from me where I literally sent you all of what's up on that site.
Correct. And I have that as well as others. So it's I guess we'd prefer to do it in that format because that way it would cut down on attachments being lost or whatnot, but it may be easier for everyone just to actually do the straight attachments.
I mean, it may be simpler for you to simply send the attachments than trying to walk all these people through.
That's true. So I guess we'll see from there. Anything else? I'll get this sent off to you immediately, and hopefully it'll be posted. I know, unfortunately, I still have a backlog of everything. So.
No, actually, you should know that, as best as I could tell, the 23rd and 24th, you know, sort of meeting date, it disappeared. It's not there.
On the website?
On the website. Because I went, when you were talking about the PowerPoint deck that you were presenting to people, I went to see if that was posted. And your 19th conference call is there, but your 23rd and 24th meeting is not. So.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, thank you, Charmin.
Little crises, Ian. The one other thing you will see from me is a email, sort of, it suddenly occurred to Susan and I, is it possible for us to see other measure submitters' submissions? Because if we're trying to deal with harmonization, it helps us to know, you know, it's wonderful we have the numerator and the denominator in that table. That's great, beyond the middle. But things like, well, how are they actually doing? What data are they using? Those kinds of things, as you try to think about addressing harmonization, it's helpful to know. And we didn't know whether in the process there's a way to see other people's submissions or not.
And I think that's something I'm going to have to get back to you on. I know that's something that we've been discussing internally here at NQF because we do deal with some proprietary measures. Which cannot be disclosed fully to the public.
That I can understand.
I know, I guess for right now, if you were able to look online at the what was submitted, obviously, like you said, you indicate you saw you know, the numerator and denominator. I know there are a couple measures within this set that are similar to a degree.
Yeah.
So
it's trying to think through the ones that are they're similar, and they're you know. So anyway.
And I will get back to you to try to see kind of where we stand in terms of providing information for individuals to move forward on harmonization during a project, being able to look at specific measure, I guess, the specs
yes.
for it. So,
okay. All right. If it's possible, yes, you know, because Tuesday's here quickly. So this had to do with, you know, is there any chance to look at stuff before Tuesday? But good
luck. I will try to get back to you.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Charmin. Bye.